Hello, welcome to Waldman's Words with Tim Dove and not Emily Burke. I'm excited about this episode. I like Tim a lot. He works in Burbank, where I am right now, Burbank/North Hollywood, at Ernie Ball. And I've been using their strings since 1994. I don't plan on stopping anytime soon. Hashtag sponsored. Respect to Tim Dove, respect to upstate New York, respect to emotional hardcore, and especially, most importantly, respect to omelets. I'm sure we'll talk about all these things when he arrives. Artist relations at Ernie Ball, I can only imagine Tim's Rolodex. It's daunting/awesome. So the next few weeks on Waldman's Words are booked. In fact, everything is booked till like November 2019. But next week, I will actually be in Hawaii with the wife. So that's why I'm recording two today. Last week's episode, Eric Wiener, I literally just recorded a few minutes ago, which was a phone call. And this is an in-studio. So we're going to end my Adobe day with a freaking bang. So again, thank you, Tim Dove, for coming out. This episode is going to be fucking awesome. So the following week, we actually have Raymond Rasmussen, who behind the scenes gives incredible advice to bands, producers, engineers, you name it. He is an encyclopedia of information, so I hope to learn plenty from that episode. After that one, we've got Eddie Deal. I'm excited about this one. He actually is the head of a major blockchain/music/entertainment website that hopefully will really take over, because, you know, I hear a lot of stuff about blockchain and then people mostly shut up about it because they're not Bitcoin experts. But I think this Eddie guy is, and I actually had his Peer Tracks, which is the name of his company, Cedric Coban, on the show earlier this year, actually with like pretty much no notice. So that was a fun one for me. And we also actually had Jesse Grushak on the show, who is talking about Ujo music. So this is the wave of the future, and I need to learn as much as possible. The following week, we've got Taylor and Spa on the show. And like I usually say, I normally would have maybe 5 to 10% of the guests on the show are performers. Mostly people are behind the scenes, and maybe they perform as well, but their main gig is behind the scenes. But Taylor actually plays in a band called Taylor and the Apes with one of the groomsmen at my wedding, Dave Prince, who I play in bands with. So I think it's going to be interesting because we're going to talk about, I guess, balancing that band and a day job, a 9 to 5 or a 5 to 9, whatever you want to do. So, and then actually, I think the following week, I will be actually in New York for Thanksgiving. And this episode's probably airing shortly after that. So time is a motherfucker. Anyway, back to Tim Dove. You're awesome. I hope to learn a lot about strings, about omelets, about theories, about upstate New York, about Burbank, and about myself. Every single Tuesday night, 5 o'clock Pacific time, 8 a.m. Eastern/upstate time, Waldman's Words, a new episode airs. We are in the triple digits of episodes and rerunning every single Sunday morning, bright and freaking early, 5 a.m. Pacific, 8 a.m. Eastern. You could go on Adobe.com, stream every single episode for free. You can go to the iTunes podcast app, subscribe for free, and stream every episode. I want y'all to learn, and I'm learning a lot. And enjoy these commercials, enjoy these ads, because Tim will be here shortly. Stick around. Tim's here.
Hello.
Thank you for making the trek from Burbank to Burbank.
It was a long drive.
I bet it was.
No.
What was it, like 6 minutes?
8 minutes.
Did you do an ab workout?
The whole time.
You worked on your core while sitting straight.
I did Kegels the whole time.
Wow. We went down there. My my wife's father, so my father-in-law is an OBGYN, so shout out to that region. Anyway, we're off to a fucking shining start. I met you a few years ago, and I still know you. So yeah. Congrats to you.
You made it into my phone. I saved your name, so.
You guys can't see me, but I look like Macaulay Culkin Home Alone right now, like mouth wide open. And we have shared, we haven't shared specific omelets, but we shared an omelet experience twice.
Yeah.
What's that place called? Like Number something?
Eaton Park.
That place is dope as fuck, dude.
I actually almost went there yesterday.
Well, almost only counts in horseshoes and hand grenades.
On a biscuit. Horse grenades and biscuit. Shoes.
This is awesome. I feel like we're stoned and you're straight edge. So it's like, this is great. So you are from the upstate area, correct?
Yeah, I'm from upstate New York originally.
And we just had last week, which was recorded 5 minutes ago, a Westchester dude, and I'm a Long Island guy. So it's we've got like, I guess, like the factions of the Confederacy and the unions right here. And what's crazy is that like where you are, it's more northern, but it's more Confederate.
Oh, yeah. There's where I'm from. It's very the next door neighbor could be the most liberal college teacher. And the next to that is like the hickest like truck dude with a rebel flag for some reason, even though you're in upstate New York. It's the weirdest place. But you know,
with southern accents too,
there's definitely a twang. I don't know where it comes from.
And Buffalo. I don't fucking know.
And then if you, I don't know if you've ever seen Place Beyond the Pines with Ryan Gosling and stuff, but they filmed that in Troy, New York, which is like by Albany.
Okay.
And people have like a Long Island accent in Troy. There's no reason. There's like people that I went to shows with that just had that accent.
Ithaca is gorgeous. That's all I know about that. And my dad went to Syracuse. Yeah, it's a phenomenon up there.
There's some weird pockets. Even my wife kind of has like a weird Minnesota twang sometimes.
And oh, Bobby.
Yeah, but she grew up 15 minutes south of me.
See, my accent makes sense because I'm from Long Island.
Yeah, see.
And you kind of sound like the general newscaster. Like you don't really have a twang of any region. Like if I could have sworn you'd be from like Michigan.
I'm ominous. I don't know.
You are so ominous, and you're staring me dead into my soul. And
isn't that what you do?
Yes. We said like right now it's like laser eyes, and I'm feeling like I'm gonna turn into an omelet. So upstate New York, tell me, because when I think of upstate New York and aggressive music, I think of like Snapcase and like Every Time I Die and all that stuff. But like, what was your gateway drug into music? Because obviously you work for a string and guitar company.
Yeah. It was weird. Like, my uncles were music people. They were in like hair metal bands and shit. But
don't say in shit. Hair metal is awesome.
No,
don't. You could fucking curse.
It was ungood.
Oh, it was the opposite.
Yeah. But got into music really random. A friend of mine, his mom worked at like the local grocery store, and some of her coworkers were in like a black metal band called Shale.
And, did not expect that.
Yep. And she was like, do you guys want to go see some
Bagging Groceries?
Yo, you need to listen to it. Look it up.
I'm going to look it up right now.
S-H-E-O-L. I don't know if you'll find anything at all, but so we went to the show, and it was at a place called Luna's Underground, which is no longer there. But it wasn't all ages, so we had to sneak in, and it was next door to the police station. So once we were inside, we couldn't come back out.
You snuck into a venue by a police station.
Yeah, and ironically, at that police station is also City Hall, and my mom works at City Hall, so she like was right there.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's some risky business. By the way, I looked up Shale, and as you know, my last name is Waldman, so I know a little bit about the Hebrew team, but I never heard of this. It is actually a term in the Hebrew Bible, which is a place of darkness to which all the dead go, both the righteous and the unrighteous, regardless of the moral choices made in life, a place of stillness and darkness cut off from life and from God. So that is...
How fucking black metal is that?
That's the penultimate black metal band name. Yeah. I mean, there's literally nothing heavier than Shale.
So there was that.
I'm looking up the band now.
I just remember that the guitar player was this... was this woman, her name was Kathy, and she looked like she was 40 years old, but I'm pretty sure she was like 20 at the time.
Mm-hmm. Black metal ages you.
But she was a fucking shredder, and she like taught guitar locally and stuff too. So it was just the weirdest band of, they would always play like Guns N' Roses, but like black metal.
Okay, so Black Guns and Black Roses.
Yeah.
Okay.
So,
November Blood.
November... Raining Blood. They actually did.
They did Slayer
too. So, dope. I mean, but yeah. So, it was bands like that, Traumacide, Deicide, like all those crazy metal bands. That's for some reason what was attracted to our area a lot. Like Skinless, I don't know if you know them, but they're from our area.
I mean, it makes sense because I've spoken about this with a lot of people because it's the combination of the temperature and the isolation probably inspires a lot of angriness.
Sure, yeah.
Or anger.
Yeah.
And whereas like a lot of the East Coast, like, closer to like major cities like a Philadelphia or in New York, it's more about missing your girlfriend and eating pizza. So it's like those are the struggles for us.
Yeah, we were, I mean, at the time, this is when I was like 13. Okay. I think my brother was 12. He was going with me.
Oh, Irish twins?
We are. Oh, yeah. No, we're not.
Oh.
13 months. So we're just barely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Your parents waited.
They waited. They're like, we're good. We're good. Yeah. So we were going to those shows, and after, I don't know, maybe a couple months, they started making them matinee shows, so they were all ages, mm-hmm. and then it was...
Like at a VFW type place, or at that
same
venue?
It was at the
same
place, okay. Luna's Underground, yeah. And then music was actually, it was random, like where we're from, like Glens Falls and Saratoga Springs, and where...
Skidmore.
Yeah, Skidmore, I mean, that's where my wife's dad works.
And we spoke about my wife's dad, who's an OBGYN, so it's all about the fucking father-in-law.
Thanks,
yeah.
Dads.
Yeah, dads, you know, it's not that we have any dad issues or anything.
No.
None.
My dad won't talk to me. No, I'm just kidding.
He talks to me all the time. He actually tweeted me the other day. He's like, yo, where's Tim at?
Yeah, my dad and his track phone could definitely tweet you.
Where there's like four letters. Remember texting when there were like four letters?
Yeah.
That shit was fun.
Yeah, it actually took talent to text fast. Remember that?
Yeah, I remember. That was like the art of the MySpace top 8 and the profile. Anyway, so back to your father not loving you. No.
Yeah,
so
my dad beats me.
Oi!
Wow, still.
The Waldman's words gets fucking real,
yeah,
dude.
Yeah, why do you think we liked black metal where we were?
Yeah, black eyes.
Yeah. What did you say?
I said black eyes.
Sure.
Okay. What? Who?
Yeah, but... And then eventually the Albany scene, Boston and everything started to come over, and there was like hardcore bands coming. And mm-hmm. there was this band, I remember, they were called Embrace Today. They were like a hardcore band from Boston.
Like a posse hardcore type band?
They were like, no, they were straight edge hardcore, which is the first time I heard what straight edge was too.
Like Judge straight edge or like Minor Threat?
No, these dudes are like angry. They were like Boston hardcore stuff.
Okay.
You know what I mean? But it was all straight edge stuff. Later on, they started to do like the eyeliner thing and they changed a lot, but... Like, at the time, that was, like, the most hardcore band I've ever heard as far as, like, fast. Because I liked punk music. I didn't like death metal. It was just the shows that they had.
Well, what punk, like the main... Because if you were 13, that's when people kind of it was learn like, about non-mainstream things.
It was, like, Punk-O-Rama. Like, the Punk-O-Rama Epitaph. Compilations were, like, where it was at for me, you know? Yeah.
That was my gateway drug to Rancid, NoFX,
yeah,
Bad Religion.
Yeah, yeah. And I was just, like, you know, all those bands were, like, rad to me. I remember the same friend that brought me to that show, his mom that brought us to the show, gave me like a tape. I think it was from his sister because she's older, but gave me a tape. And on one side it was like NoFX, Ribbed, and on the other side it was like Punk and Drublic, and it was like perfection.
Pretty
was,
sweet.
Yeah. So, and then I loved pop punk too. So I like, that's kind of how I taught myself guitar was all that. But so the scene kind of evolved from there and it got bigger and bigger. And then we started going to shows in Albany more and we had Valentine's there in Northern Lights and Saratoga Winners and stuff. And that was where I started to see Most Precious Blood and we started to see like, I don't know, like Snapcase type bands or whatever. Mm-hmm. And where we're from is like One King Down was the big like, oh, we're the Albany band.
Right.
They were long broken up by the time... We got into music, but...
Is State Champs like the Albany band now? Like, that's what I think of when
you know,
I think of Albany.
You know what's funny? Is State Champs... So, when we were... When I had already moved by the time they kind of, like, started to be more popular. But the guitar player, Tony, was in a band with my brother. They were in Recon.
Okay.
Which is, like, a mosh band. I mean, they still kind of do it, I guess. But the other dudes, they're a lot younger than me, so I didn't really know them. They were one of those bands that, like, you would see that they're playing shows, but they didn't really play that much, like, shows that I would see.
Mm-hmm.
And pop punk wasn't really a big genre in Albany area.
What year was this?
So this is, I moved in 2009, so this is up until then.
Okay, 2009. I mean, that was when, like, bands like A Day to Remember really, really taking off, like, when
sure.
the whole, like... metalcore, whatever word. I just read that on The Singer of Atreyu claimed that he invented metalcore, but like,
sure.
I mean, no, just I invented radio.
Yeah, obviously, so as you can see.
Look. See,
why else is there four microphones in here?
Because of me.
Yeah.
Because of my show that's been on for 2 years. Totally. And I also invented lying. So, but yeah, that time period, it was weird because I guess there was a resurgence and now like it's going down. But the pop punk, I'd say really, really did really well like 2 or 3 years ago. Like it was really like that was when like Story So Far, who's obviously just put out a new record and they're doing well. But them, State Champs, they were all really like rising.
Yeah, there. I mean, everything goes in cycles, right?
Right.
So, you know, when I was younger, it was like the age of Blink. So obviously like all of us, right? So mm-hmm. there was like Phoenix TX and
Newfound Glory.
And Newfound Glory, yeah, mm-hmm. and Blink and MXPX and you and those bands were on MTV too. So it wasn't just like
MTV, what?
Yeah. It wasn't just like, oh, these are bands that are like popular in that kind of subgenre that we like. It was like, oh, these are mainstream.
They're on
bands.
TRL.
Yeah.
They were massive.
And so there was that phase of pop punk. And then that kind of went away. And you know, maybe that's where the A Day to Remember thing. Now it's this new phase of like pop punk, like State Champs or A Story So Far or Modern Baseball or whatever.
Neck Deep, all that
yeah,
stuff.
Where they're kind of bringing in almost like this semi like hardcore riff type stuff sometimes and like, you know, and then pop punk melodies and everything. And it goes on to this new kind of post pop punk genre.
Mm-hmm.
And you still have, but I mean, how many bands can you say are like Newfound Glory or Blink now? You wouldn't really survive necessarily.
Yeah, the drive-through sound
yeah,
of that
exactly.
then it's not and then there was like the whole Fueled By like
yeah.
mid-2000s but now
there's more of like a mix to it. Like now it's as far as for us, like I'll fucking go see Starting Line for sure because it's a nostalgia thing for me mm-hmm. and I love that band. But if that band came out now, I don't know. It might just be like a wet fart and no one, you know what I mean? Like, I don't know what it would hit like. State Champs is one of the few bands where they did enough in like the VFWs and Smaller World where they figured out what that sound should be. Plus mm-hmm. the singer is insane.
Mm-hmm.
Like that dude sounds sick all the time.
Yeah, no, he's pretty perfect live.
Yeah, it's kind of bullshit, but like, you know.
In
but
a good way, kids.
In a good way, yeah.
We at Ernie Ball strive for lack of talent and execution.
Yeah, we look for the lowest common denominator.
Which is America.
Yeah. but yeah, so anyway, so that's kind of where I'm from. The music genre changed a lot. By the time I had gone to college and left, that was kind of, it was starting to taper off in the area because a lot of the venues shut down or whatever. Like they burnt, some of the guys burnt down Saratoga Winners for the insurance money. They got caught.
Sounds like a mob story.
Yeah. Valentine's got shut down as well. That's gone.
Support live music, kids.
Seriously. Northern Lights is still there. Now it's called Upstate Music Hall.
Okay.
Which, that's the main venue that
what
most
about the Chance?
Play
I think I've heard of that. And is that Poughkeepsie,
that's
right?
Poughkeepsie, yeah.
How far is that?
That's like 3 hours south.
Oh shit, okay.
Maybe like two and a half.
Well, maybe. Then the Icon in Buffalo, I remember playing there and being told by the people who worked there that I should watch out when I leave the venue.
Buffalo's so stupid. My brother lived in Buffalo for like years and he's just like, yeah,
is there a big Saratoga Springs Buffalo rivalry?
No, not at all.
SUNY Buffalo and Skidmore.
The best part is I'm from South Glens Falls, which is a nothing town, and which is awesome, but it was between Glens Falls, which had the shows, in Saratoga Springs, but didn't really have shows, but it was on the way to Albany.
Okay.
So, like, where I grew up is about an hour north of Albany. So there's nothing around us except farms. So, but I was in a band with my brother and my friends, and it was very easy to just play shows because there's nothing else to do.
Well, what did you go to college for and what's your degree? I don't even know this. This is fun for me.
Yeah, so I went to college, for music industry.
There you go.
But it was kind of like it was a weird thing. So I was going to community college first, which is right by where I grew up. And I was going for music cause I didn't know what else to go for. And I'm not good at it. So
you mean music performance?
Yeah. Like I was doing classical guitar.
Okay.
And I was kind of just taking classes and doing very terrible what I was going because I didn't know what else to do. And then I ended up, I actually came out to California and worked with my aunt up in San Francisco. She owns a speech pathology like program. Mm-hmm. And they had a music therapist.
I'm just gonna take
there.
A picture, don't mind me. Okay. Continue. Because especially when you're talking about therapy.
So they had a music therapist on staff, and I ended up helping the music therapist for a day or two. He ended up getting fired, and I just took over with my aunt. Like, we did the music therapy classes together, and then after that I was like, oh shit, I should do music therapy. So I shifted a little bit to where I wanted to go to a school for music therapy, and found out from some other people that basically you have to get your master's in it at a certain point.
Can you explain what it is, though? Because sure. I really try to make this informative, educational, and I don't even know.
So last time I looked into it, so remember, this is like 6 years. No, this is like 10 years ago.
Okay.
Fuck.
Time fucking flies,
I'm
dude.
I'm old.
Yeah, well, I'm 37, man. You're in your early 30s?
32.
There you go. You're in your fucking prime.
You tell that to me hobbling around every morning.
Does it take you longer to pee than normal?
It
does
takes
your back
me longer
hurt?
To do everything than normal. I have to lean on the fucking sink to brush my teeth because my back hurts.
I mean, that is a combination of the most pathetic and the second most pathetic thing I've heard of.
Resourceful is what it would be.
Yeah, no, you multitask.
Music therapy is, it's as dumb as it sounds, it literally what it sounds like is what it is. Like
physical therapy for musicians?
Yeah, okay. Well, no. It's like... most of the time people use it for in like jails or something like that for calming stuff. So music, it just accesses a different part of your brain, right? So people use it for like listening to things to calm. I forget what it's called.
Well, is it for people who are going through an extremely traumatic situation?
It can be. I mean, okay. It can be like any type of therapy. But the one that I was interested in the most, the aspect that I liked, was this speech pathology part of it, where the kids that I had worked with my aunt, they were like 1 to 6, and they all had speech delays for some reason, whether it was like they were autistic or
higher degree.
This is like you're 4 years old and you haven't even started talking yet because of whatever reason. And I like that because, one, I hate kids, and when they don't talk, that makes it better because they're just funny.
And, I mean, that is the most evil way to do something altruistic I've ever heard.
But it's true.
Yes. No. I mean, I want to have an airline called No Kid Airline where you have to be 21. And it's not like spring break where like everyone's getting fucked up. It's just like,
it's just respectful. Everyone's reading their Kindle.
People are doing whatever they want that doesn't involve a crying baby. And here's my stance on this is my stance on a lot of political Facebook stuff. If you don't like that idea, don't fly the airline. Anyway, back to you. NKA.
Yeah. So I was like, oh, shit, I could do that. Like, and so what I liked was these kids that for some reason, they can't talk or say very many words.
God knows what happened.
But they could sing to a song. Like, they know all the words to like Twinkle Twinkle Little Star. And I was like, wow, that's so fucking interesting. So, that's what I wanted to do is start to get into music therapy and all that.
We've never spoken about this ever on this show. So thank you for that.
Yeah.
No,
it's
cool.
A whole thing. And it's grown a lot in the years. You know, this is 10 years ago, so it's changed a lot since then. But so long story short, I transferred to a normal college. I went to SUNY Oneonta in New York.
Stoneonta.
Yep. You know, did the whole like music thing or whatever. And I was basically taking music industry because all you needed was any type of music degree, and then you can go get your master's in music therapy.
So as long as it said music on it.
Yeah. So I did music industry thinking that all of the marketing classes and stuff would help me with my band, which was a hardcore band, which is never going to go anywhere anyways, but whatever. So
hey, it'll still help. Stop diminishing your own self-worth. And believe it or not, this is going by so quickly and so seamlessly that we're going to take a break, and then we're going to touch on the Ernies and the balls. But okay. But this is super different / interesting. So have at it.
Okay, so it all connects. So after...
it's all coming back to
it'll
me.
It'll make sense in the end, I promise. I ended up doing not great, but okay in school. And when I went to apply to a master's program for music therapy, I did not get in because my grades were mediocre at best. And I only applied to one school because I'm really smart.
You had lots of options.
I was like, hey, you know what? I'll get in. Didn't get in. So... at the time, my girlfriend, who is now my wife, but we were dating then, she was like, well, she was doing music, or she was doing audio engineering. And she was like, well, I got a part-time offer out in California. Do you want to just go and make it work? And I was like, all right.
What year was this?
So this is 2009. So this is right after the fucking crash. There's no money anywhere, especially music.
Thanks,
industry.
Obama.
Yeah, so so we moved to California and we moved to LA. I literally did we did one last like US tour with my band that
give them a shout out.
Gaining Ground.
Fuck yeah. Yeah. You gained several miles.
Yeah, like 12. And then came back. I worked like at two warehouses. We played like one last show in Albany and then we left the next morning and drove across country, and I moved with like a duffel bag and an Xbox.
You move with like touring gear.
Not even. I left my bedroom at home is still set up like as if I just left that day.
Well, that's because your family's in mourning.
Like I told you, my dad beats me, so he needs
to. I mean, I love that we're joking about this. No, it's fine. If you're offended by that, I'm sorry.
Ray Dove, shout out.
Yeah, that's biggest, a sick shout out to Mr. Ever. Dove. Mr. Dove, you're awesome. You really hit me hard. so we're gonna take a short break where we're gonna talk about Ernie Ball and the true meat and potatoes / cheese and bacon omelet while you're here. But if you have, I guess, an adjective to describe the previous 20-something minutes of your life, what would it be?
Weird.
Fuck you, man. No. Stick around for Waldman's Words with Tim Dove. Hello, we are back. And fucking weird. Thank you.
Wait, what was the commercial?
You'll only hear it in your head. I'm assuming it's what the people, the tens of gazillions of people listening to obviously, this right now. Yeah. Obviously, it's fucking Tim Dove. It's like, probably, fuck Waldman.
It's probably me undies.
Me underoos. Yeah. Basically, that's where sometimes they play songs by pop punk bands or non-pop punk bands. Sometimes they have ads for services that you should all utilize, and sometimes they talk about various shows on Adobe, but you know what? It doesn't fucking matter because now you're on.
Okay.
So you moved to Los Angeles.
Yep.
Boulevard of Broken Dreams. Where did you live? Do you live in the area you live in now?
No, I lived in, we lived in a, well, okay. So we first lived in Valley Village for a week with a friend, and, but we moved here and about a week later, I flew back to New York to do a tour. I was filling in for this hardcore band. So we did a tour for about a month, and then I went back to California. In the meantime, my girlfriend moved into a loft in downtown, like on basically like right outside Skid Row area.
Safe.
Well, at the time, there was nothing down there. Like there was the loft and like a little market, and that was about it. But we lived there because her boss, who owned it, wanted to live with his girlfriend and didn't want to give up his loft. And we were like, yo, we can't afford that. And he's like, what can you afford? And she told him, and he's like, all right, that's fine. So it was like this fucking luxury loft with a rooftop pool and all this shit. And
it's like the standard.
We were living like real not correct. I didn't have a job. She was working part-time, and we were just, I don't know.
It's a big disparity.
It was a totally unrealistic, like, yeah, this is L.A. What?
Fuck
what
yeah, man. About? I mean, you don't complain. You just...
So we made it work, but
the struggle is real.
Yeah, it was real hard. So I made enough money on that tour to basically pay for my rent and my flight, and that was about it. And then came back, and in the meantime, that dude and his girlfriend broke up, so we had to move, and we moved to Pasadena.
Thanks, Obama.
Again.
Yeah.
And then we lived in Pasadena for, I don't know, about a year and a half, and now I lived in Glendale ever since then.
Glendale. So. I mean, that's very close to where you are now. So I guess, I mean, you have an unconventional marriage with locales, but yeah. let's not even get there just yet. When did you start Ernie Ball? I mean, because I as a kid, I just was always in awe at the back of the strings with all the artists and the commas and all the people that you guys work with. So it's quite a history. And obviously, Music Man bass is definitely in my top five basses.
Yeah.
I mean that.
I mean, I got started at Ernie Ball about a little over five years ago, but I had played Ernie Ball since I was a kid, obviously, for the same reason. On the back of the pack, I was like, oh, Tom DeLonge.
Every Warped Tour band.
I guess I'll play these. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then when I would go to Warped Tour, there'd be the booth, and there'd be the whole thing, and that was back when Warped Tour was fun for us. Like,
well, it's
because
we were kids, and we didn't go for work. I mean, yeah. Warped Tour is still fun, but now I have to wear my industry hat.
But, you know, the genre, I mean, even case in point, the genres of the band, what was pop punk, what was popular versus what's popular now is we outgrew that.
Well, let's talk about that quickly, because there are people that are always like, oh, Warped Tour sucks now or whatever, but like, I'm fucking 37. Mm-hmm. Like, Warped Tour is not for me. Yeah. Warped Tour is for that kid who's misunderstood in high school that wants to go. But I mean, obviously, like, Warped Tour 98 was my first one. It was Rancid, NoFX, Bad Religion, Pennywise, yeah. Aquabats, Meg. It was sick.
Yeah. Yeah. And I agree. I think that the statement of Warped Tour sucks now is just what people our age say, because we don't like most of the bands at play.
And they don't seek out new bands anyway.
Yeah. Like, I'm like, of course, another 32, 33 year old person's probably not going to be into Beartooth. You're probably not going to like Falling in Reverse. But there's thousands of other people here who do want to see those mm-hmm. bands. And so it's just a generation gap thing. I mean, I would imagine that there was plenty of 30 plus year old people who hated the lineups that we liked 15 years ago.
Because it wasn't authentic punk to them.
Yeah, to them, they're yeah. like, this isn't fucking Sex Pistols.
Where's the fucking Black Flag?
Who the fuck's Millencolin?
Like, oh, God, Losing Must.
Yeah, like, so, you know, I think that, I mean,
my parents RIP, didn't like the grunge stuff I liked in the 90s. Like,
parents were funny. They were into anything that we liked, pretty much.
That's awesome.
Yeah. It was weird. Like, our family grew up, nobody else is musical. Me, my brother, my sister are, but my parents are not. Mm-hmm. So my brother still plays drums in bands and does really well. My sister teaches music at a school and she does like play shit, you know. Like,
that's what it's technically called.
I think it's called play shit. Yeah. On her tax return, it says play shit.
No. I'm actually, that's how I describe this show.
Yeah.
I play shit.
No, it's called talk shit.
Talk shit. Don't yeah. quit. Get hit.
But I think it's funny how music
it coalesced into that. All of your siblings. I mean, that's awesome. I mean, my parents had no musical background. My mom knew three chords because she went to Woodstock. And my sister likes to dance, but I'm the lone wolf.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I'm not good at music. I happen to work
in
it.
Oh, I think you're great.
Oh, thanks.
And you even had some music produced by a guy in Theosin. But anyway, we could talk about that in a minute. So Ernie Ball, let's...
Yeah, so I started working at Ernie Ball a little over 5 years ago. I got the job. I was working at a music... I worked at a music magazine, then I worked at a music marketing company for like 6 months and I hated it. And a dude that I had worked with at the music magazine said, oh, my friend at Ernie Ball is hiring an LA guy. I was like, oh, sick. Ended up being his friend was Brian Ball. And I did an interview. I did a second interview and yada, yada. And then I got hired for marketing and artist relations.
And they're based out of SLO, correct?
So there's two factories. The main factory is in San Luis Obispo, so Central Coast, California. And that's the original factory where they make all the guitars and basses, mm-hmm. where the Ball family works, like all that kind of stuff. And then in, I think it's like 2004 maybe or something, they made the Coachella factory, which is where all the strings are made. They did that because, you know, they needed more room.
More space.
And the drier, like, climate in the desert is better for the strings. Because if you think about it, like, there's no moisture. They don't have to worry about oxidation, stuff like that, because it's so dry there.
And playing shows outside, you have to tune a lot more often than you would inside. And a lot of people don't realize that.
I mean, even think about, like, not to throw shade, but, like, DiDario's made in New York, but it's humid as fuck there. So you have more chances of having those
strings. I said before the show, we're not a muckraking talk. No, it's fine. You can say what you want. I don't have a comment on that. I mean, I can. I was actually in my band, The Sage Drive. I had a Dean Markley bass sponsorship, but now Ernie Ball wised up and sponsors Lido Beach. So there you go. But I love Ernie Ball strings. But it makes sense, certain environments. Like, why do you think Ben and Jerry's does so well? Because it's made in fucking Vermont.
Because it's delicious.
Well, yeah, Long Island Jewish boys, just so you know. Ben and Jerry, yeah, it's so good. I mean, we're going to go to a quick sweet tooth transition. Have you had Sprinkles ice cream?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
That's just crack.
It's good.
That's just crack.
Dude, Ben and Jerry's, just 2 nights ago, I had a pint of half-baked.
That's like, that is actually, that sitting. Replaces your last saddest comment ever. Yeah, I had a box of Kleenex and a pound of Ben and Jerry's.
My favorite thing to do is to just watch like 7 episodes of The Office and eat a pint of Ben and Jerry's. And I'm lactose intolerant, so it's a fun night after that.
I know you make several donations. My first job in LA, I was a casting assistant on the pilot of The Office. Swear to you.
And you didn't give me a call.
That's it's because like you weren't castable back then, and I didn't know who you were. But whatever. That's my biggest regret in life is not facilitating that. And maybe that's the most pathetic thing ever uttered on this show. So tell me more about Ernie Ball, because I really am looking at this as an ad for some kid in Minnetonka, Minnesota, who's interested in learning about the greatest string/guitar company this side of the fucking solar system. How do you like that?
What an intro.
Let it down.
Ernie Ball's sick. I mean, you know, it's weird to work for a company that you had been involved with since you were a kid, almost inadvertently, you know? Like, I was buying the strings and playing the strings. I even tried to... I remember as a kid, when I was, like, getting more serious about guitar, I was like, oh, I need to try other brands. And I tried D'Addario. I tried Fender Bullets. I tried... I think I tried DeMarkley. And I broke everything but the D'Addario ones. And the D'Addario ones, I got annoyed because of the colors. And, like, one...
That's racist.
One, what if you're colorblind?
Yeah, then you don't know how to change the string.
Two, like, they were all intertwined. They weren't separately packaged like Ernie Ball was. So I just got annoyed and didn't use them anymore.
So Ernie Ball was user-friendly and lasted longer.
Yeah, so it was user-friendly. It was like everything was color-coded as far as the packaging, so it was way easier. The artist on the back of the pack just showed you like, oh, if I buy these, I'm going to sound like fucking Pennywise or whatever. Yeah, so I had always played Ernie Ball. And then when I got hired, I learned about all this other shit. One, all the other products that Ernie Ball makes, which I never even knew.
Coasters.
Well, I mean, there's the accessories, but there's all of the acoustic stuff. There's all of the specialty stuff, the mandolin, lap steel, like everything you could think of, because Ernie Ball has been playing or making strings since 62. So,
surf guitar.
I mean, that's, well, so Ernie the guy, he had a guitar shop. It was the first guitar dedicated guitar shop in California, and it was in Tarzana. And
Norm's is in Tarzana. That's what I think of. Do you know what I'm talking about?
I thought that was Encino.
No, Norm's is 100% Tarzana.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I bought a guitar from there.
Yeah, that's like the local jaunt. Anyway.
And Sterling Ball, who is Ernie Ball's son, that's who owns the company now, he... you know, did all of like the tech work and the schlepping gear and stuff like that. So he was talking about like putting gear into the Beach Boys car and stuff like that.
Speaking of surf guitar.
Yeah. And then Ernie, the guy, decided I want to move to San Luis Obispo so I can surf more. And he has like all these like race cars and stuff. So he moved up there, and that's where the factory's been ever since. You know, it's sick because it's a family owned company, like I said. So there's Sterling Ball is the son of Ernie Ball. And then his sons, Brian Ball, Casey Ball, and Scotty Ball, all run everything.
I like Scotty already.
Scotty does most of the Music Man stuff, and Brian does most of the Ernie Ball stuff. But, I mean, they both intertwine with both sides of the company. But that's it. I mean, there's no shareholders. There's no, there's no outside sources that you know, dictate what we do. Everything we do is made for and dedicated for players. They don't go, how can we beat this other company and make this other thing? They go, let's make some strings they last way longer. They're stronger. They still get the sound.
And
that
they're
you
cheap.
Want. Yeah. And still keep it within reason as far as what we can do. So, you know, that's what actually pushes the progression of the brand. Especially like our latest one is the Paradigm strings, which I wish I had when I was in like a hardcore band, because they last so much longer than your normal strings without coating them or anything.
And they stay in tune. They're built to go lower, I assume.
They stay in tune. I mean, there's the normal gauge sets. So if you want to go lower, right. Yeah, there's thicker strings and everything. But it was the type of thing where if you're in a band and you're touring in a van, you have to make those strings last, right? So if you're at show two or three, especially show three, that's the questionable show. That's where you're like, fuck, am I going to break a string today? And so you have to change them. But the Paradigm strings, they kind of changed that for us, where it was someone could go like a week to 2 weeks without changing strings, without fear of breaking a string. Mm-hmm. Of course, there's always outside strings that fucking break and people give a shit about it and whatever. But like, you know, I had bands like Tiger's Jaw and Every Time I Die and stuff go test them for us. And they were like, yeah, I got through 2 weeks. Yeah, I got through a week before I had to change them because of the tone.
Well, just to update the people listening, because they might not know this, in bands that are big enough to have a guitar tech, sometimes after every show they change a string.
Oh, of course.
Every single show, that's part of the daily gig, and not every band can afford to tour with a merch person, let alone a guitar person. So.
Right, and that's where I think that the type of strings, like some of the ones that we have,
working
like
class strings,
yeah, they're the blue collar strings.
Yeah,
they're fun. You know, they're the ones that they might cost a little bit more, but you don't have to change them every 2, 3, 4 shows. You could get a week out of them or more.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's stuff like that that we kind of come up with at Ernie Ball that really, like, I think betters.
Humanity.
Yeah. We're saving the world.
Yeah, no.
One string.
Music saves. I mean, all kidding aside, you are. Because if an artist who used Ernie Ball strings or gear is privy to a song that helps a kid who's going through a tough time, you literally do save the world.
I mean, you know, we do a lot with our big artists, especially. Like,
well, the relations, contesting. I want to get into that.
Yeah, we do. I mean, we do a lot with, like, you know, of course, Slash and you know, Eric Clapton or whatever. We did the Crossroads.
So like the small time guitar like player.
Yeah, the little
yeah,
guys.
Yeah.
And but you know, we work with over 1,800 artists now on Ernie Ball alone, just in the U.S.
Mind blown.
Yeah. And then Music Man, you know, is I don't know, a couple hundred dedicated. But then there's everybody who works with Ernie Ball also gets a discount with Music Man. So they, a lot of people just get a bass or a guitar or whatever.
It's just such a great bass, and it looks like its own company. Like,
yeah,
it's a signature.
The Stingray bass is like the most recognizable bass to me. Like,
besides, sorry, I'm gonna dispute this. Paul McCartney's violin bass.
Well, okay, yeah.
Sorry, had to do it. Had to do it.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those bases.
But it sounds better,
especially like for people like us who grew up in the warped world or whatever. It's like you think like, oh yeah, like MXPX. Yeah. Of course.
Respect.
I know the bass.
You know that Mike Carrero was on the show.
Was he?
He was. He actually used to have an Adobe show. He has his own in his own way now, but yeah. We talked about his podcast.
Yeah.
There you go. Now you're his peer.
Oh, Mike.
What up?
I just sent him some stuff, some top secret strings to try out.
I won't ax further. Get it?
Womp womp.
Womp womp. Dad jokes galore. So.
Yeah. So that's. You
know, I want to hear about artists related, because believe it or not, we're almost done with the entire fucking thing that you've marked on your calendar with like a gold star. So artist relations, I mean, speaking of which, Mike Carrera, perfect transition.
Yeah.
What do you do? Like,
so I personally now just do artist relations. And that is, I'm literally just the in-between of my company and an artist, whether that's me looking for new artists to work with, you know, trying to sign whatever band to an endorsement, or keeping the quote unquote relationship going. You know, a lot of it is just people emailing me or calling me for strings that they need for a show or a tour or whatever it is. And
or a special bass or a special
yeah,
guitar.
Or a guitar bass made. And by the way, all of our instruments are made to order. So if like you were like, hey, I need a black Stingray, 2 humbucker or whatever, I'm like, well, okay, I got to build it. It's going to be X amount of days, you know, to build it from scratch, because that's how everything is made. Mm-hmm. But so that's literally my only job, is to work with artists and try to curate like what our artist list looks like too. Because when I came in, a lot of Ernie Ball was just our legends, which is like, you know, Jimmy Page and Pete Townsend and Eric Clapton and Slash and stuff. But we had a lot of the Warped Tour world because we had been so on it since like the second year.
Mm-hmm.
But there was this giant gap of like, I hate to say the word, but like, you know, like indie hipster type stuff.
No,
you know, and that was, I worked at Filter Magazine before. So that was like the bands that I had just been working with was all those bands. So then I was like, okay, well, let's start filling in that too. So then we started working with like the War on Drugs and the 1975 or like Toro y Moi or whatever, like all those bands started to come in. And then all the hardcore bands that I had been involved with started to come in too. So it's just basically my job is building our network.
You're diversifying their palette.
I am. I'm making them.
Didn't
nice
311
portfolio.
Use, because for some reason I thought, do. Yeah, that's that. Yeah. That was, I think, that and Warped Tour stuff was what exposed me to Ernie Ball in the 90s.
Yeah, 311, like those dudes are super nice. Like, and we do a lot of content at Ernie Ball, which I help. Interview all the bands.
Oh, I was going
to
ask
book
you
all the
that.
Bands.
Yeah.
So it's called String Theory. And they're all on YouTube and on our website. But like we've done 44 episodes or something like that now. And it's been everybody from Paul Stanley and Kiss and like Kirk Hammett to like Bob from Best Coast or I don't know, like Jay Maskus from Dinosaur Jr. and stuff. And we've flown all around the country doing them too. It's just myself and one video guy doing them. And they're sick because it kind of shows the diversity of our roster, and that some artists like Kirk Hammett, millions and millions of like people have played guitar because of him.
Yep.
Or at least a million.
That's an under no million. I would say that's an understatement. Yeah. Of our lifetimes, I can't think of too many more guitar heroes than
right.
him.
Yeah, so. You're like Kirk, and he's the nicest peach. Like he's the coolest dude.
When I watched Some Kind of Monster, he seemed like the misunderstood sweetheart.
I love him. He's so awesome. And then we've done smaller artists like Courtney Barnett or
Lido Beach.
Yeah.
Well, smaller Grammy nominee. You know what's funny is Courtney Barnett was actually brought up on the last episode with
really?
Her. Yeah, I mean, Grammy nominated Australian badass, right?
Yeah, she's awesome. And you know, and we've had basically everybody in between. So with that, with all of our product videos and stuff, so content is a big part of my job too, filming it, booking it, all that kind of stuff. But yeah, that's pretty much it. I mean, luckily, like I was doing the marketing stuff too. Now we have like an actual marketing team to do it because I didn't know what I was doing. So I only do artist relations. So my job is to just run our LA showroom that we have here in Burbank and work with rad bands.
Talk to people, greet them, go to their shows when
go to a good amount of shows. I send a lot of product out. People come by the showroom to try stuff out, try out different guitars.
It's a sick-ass fucking room. I really like it.
Cool.
And it's your own room.
Yeah, I'm the only one that works there, so.
With high brew coffee. So I guess we're going to wrap this up. How can people check out what you're doing, and how can people learn more about Ernie Ball?
Well, you could definitely just go to the ErnieBall.com website. All of the, if you want to see the type of artists and stuff we work with, there's an artist tab on there. There is a whole section.
It's an endless tab, I imagine.
It is very long, yeah. And it's only got like 800 out of 1,800 artists on there.
Almost half.
Yeah, working on it. And then there's the content tab has like our string theory stuff, our TV show, which was called Pursuit of Tone. We did that with like Tom DeLonge and Buddy Guy, stuff like that. So that's on there. And then our blog as well is obviously on there. And then as far as getting in touch, all of our contacts on the website under the contact thing that has my name on there and everything. That's pretty much it.
That was a good elevator pitch to that, because your personal stuff, you're a scotch more private. So
I mean, I'm not hard to find. It's Tim Dove,
right? But
I think there's like two in the U.S. and one of them he tried to friend me on Facebook.
Scott Waldman friended me on Facebook too, and
see,
I accepted. Well, I mean, like whatever, we're in the same club. Let me see. Tim Dove. There's the chief executive officer for Pioneer Natural Resources.
I think that's the one that tried to friend me.
What's up, yo? And then scrolling. Yeah, no, that dude's way more searchable than you.
is my icon still Doug Funny?
Well, I'm looking right now, and it's you're not underscore at or at Tim underscore Dove. That's the other one, I'm assuming.
I don't know.
I just literally typed in your name, and I'm scrolling.
Boom. I'm super private.
No, that's good. Yeah. I mean, unfortunately, because, you know, I was in a band before. I was a manager. I'm pretty searchable. I'm more popular than that other Scott Waldman, so fuck you, Scott Waldman. But, yeah, no, I mean, what's awesome is, yeah, no, I'm on, like, page 3, and you're not here, but if I write Tim Dove, Ernie Ball, then it's another ball game.
Well, there's also a Tim Dove Facebook for my Ernie Ball, like, email, because I'm also
Mind
an
blown.
Admin for everything. So that's not even a real, there's nothing on there. So,
well, respect to the Dove, respect to the Ball.
So check out, you know, we got a lot of new stuff coming, especially at the end of the year, because NAMM's coming in January. So keep an eye out for that.
Well, we're going to wrap this up. I will just say the next few weeks of guests. Next week I'll be in Hawaii, but by the time this airs, it won't be next week, so I'll be bitter in Los Angeles. I still miss Emily Burke. I miss you a lot, and I appreciate you editing this show. We've got Raymond Rasmussen, who's going to be talking, I guess, probably from the perspective of like the consigliere to advise young bands, so that's a really good show. He knows way more than I do.
What a name.
I know, he's RR, but your last name's fucking Dove, so you win. That's cool as shit. We've got it's cooler than Waldman. Sorry, it is. It's fucking way cooler than Waldman. No offense, family. And we've got Eddie Deal, who is part of a Peer Tracks, a blockchain music merger, and I need to learn more about blockchain because I don't know enough. And then the following week, we got Taylor Anspaugh from the band Taylor and the Apes. Big shout out to Dave Prince, one of the grooms at my wedding. He's in the band with him. And Taylor's going to talk about balancing what you were talking about earlier, being in a band and having a job. Mm-hmm. So I guess what adjective would you give to describe other than weird, unless you're going to say weird with an exclamation point, this entire part of your life?
The entire part of my life?
Well, as in like from whence you walked into the studio.
Oh.
This segment of the Dove Day.
Wonderful.
Weird and wonderful. I'm going to say wacky in keeping with the W's. All right. Walden's words, more alliteration. Tuesdays, 5 o'clock Pacific time, 8 o'clock Eastern time in the evening. Rerunning every single Sunday morning, bright and early, 5 a.m. Tim wakes up at 4:45 every Sunday just to stream it.
Yeah.
Totally every, I mean, I totally believe what I'm saying.
Yeah.
And 8 a.m. on the East Coast, which is Saratoga time. And you can go on iTunes,
and
subscribe.
Time.
Yeah, your wife's time. Yeah, that we didn't go into that, but yeah, long distance. That's for episode 2 in my head. But every single Saturday mornings, Sunday mornings, Saturday mornings, you could just go on iTunes, the podcast app, and subscribe and listen to every single episode. You can go on adobe.com, stream everything. It's all free. Tim, I really appreciate your time. I dove you.
Dang. Thanks for having me.
Yay!
Yay!